Hey everyone, this is Jim Cowan from the Collaborative for Student Success. This is the Route K-12 Exploring Education Recovery Podcast. Each episode, we travel the country on a kind of road trip to talk about the ways public education is evolving and moving forward, particularly in the wake of the pandemic. Along the way, we hold up the best examples with the hope that those practices are repeated in other schools. Today, I'm excited to be joined by three close friends of the Collaborative to discuss the challenges facing U.S. students in math education, and the very real and very promising progress being made to ensure math is relevant and engaging for all students. Dale Chu is a former educator, school principal, outstanding advocate, and an expert on all things assessment, kindergarten through 12th grade assessment. Dale leads the Collaborative's effort to collect, share, and understand annual state assessment data on our platform, assessmenthq.org. Jocelyn Pickford is also a former educator and a former school board member with a passion for advancing access to and use of high-quality instructional materials and curriculum. Jocelyn leads the Collaborative's analysis of state curriculum policy on our platform, curriculumhq.org. And last, but certainly not least, Chad Alderman is a nationally recognized expert on school finance, staffing, and accountability policy, and leads the Collaborative's commentary analysis around educational recovery on our platform, eduprogress.org. Dale, Jocelyn, Chad, thanks for joining us today. We're excited to have you here.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks, Jim.
So let me give a little overview to kick us off. For those that are listening in, chances are you've heard about the historic declines in math learning that have been experienced by millions of students over the past 4 years. You may have children currently in school, like I do, and may be faced firsthand with the challenge of navigating a concerning test results or difficult homework assignment or a new tutoring program. If so, you're certainly not alone. Since the pandemic, we've seen a string of data points emerge that tell us just how fractured America's relationship with math is. The most recent Nation's Report Card, or NAEP, exam showed nearly two decades of math progress erased. The PISA exam, which is the International Assessment of 15-year-olds, showed America's global standing continue to weaken as we fail to address our flagging math performance. And results from annual state tests across the nation show students failing to make up ground lost. Like many students, parents, and teachers, we at the Collaborative have been reflecting on math education in order to hold up what's working best for students in schools and to begin chipping away at the common and harmful mindset that math isn't for everyone. So, starting with this episode, we're excited to kick off a month of math-focused efforts, a March Madness, if you will. We might not be as popular as our college counterpart yet, but we are hoping we can encourage our listeners to get enthused about math achievement. We'll be digging into leading efforts to ask where math is headed. We'll be tackling negative math stereotypes and challenging people to think of themselves as math people. And as we always do in the Route K-12 podcast, we'll be touring the nation to speak with the folks that are doing the hard work. Okay, let's bring in our guests. Dale, Chad, Jocelyn, thanks again for joining us. So let me just start off. It's the dealio with math. This has been such a tough nut for us to get involved with. I'm just curious, let's just do a quick round robin, starting with Jocelyn. What was your relationship with math as you were going through your own sort of education?
Yeah, thanks, Jim. Great to be with you. So I'll confess, I was one of those stereotypical girls who considered myself not a math person and definitely gave myself permission to feel that way. And think a lot of folks around me gave me that permission as well. It was the class I struggled the most with. A lot of the other classes came easily to me, but it was also the class that I was the proudest when I did well in. And in fact, at one point, I had to choose one teacher from high school to speak on my behalf for something I was doing. And I chose my math teacher because she had actually seen me overcome, you know, some of my hardest academic obstacles. So that all has helped me as a parent now of a boy and a girl who are doing math at the seventh and ninth grade level. And I'm really careful with how I talk about it, especially with my daughter, and think about, you know, efforts like Zurn, which is a provider of online high quality math lessons. And one of their taglines is all kids are math kids. And I sort of have that in my head now as a parent so that hopefully my daughter doesn't grow up giving herself permission the way I did.
Chad, how about you?
I really liked math in elementary school, and I was really good.
Of course, you did.
I know. Sorry to play in the stereotypes here, but I was really good at the basic like times tables and things like that. We played this game called Around the World, where you would stand up and face someone, and then it was a race to see who could do the math multiplication problem faster. And I was pretty good at that. But as it got, as math got harder, I struggled more. And so I really struggled in trigonometry and calculus, and I sort of lost interest. I didn't think of myself as doing that much math. Even in grad school, there was advanced regressions and things like that. And I just didn't have the brain for it that other people did. I didn't get it as easily. So it's taken me a while to rediscover it. I love basic level statistics and means, modes, averages, things like that. And I see it a lot in my own kids and how they have a different type of emphasis on what is emphasized in their schooling. And we can get into that and like how it's different than what I saw as a kid.
Deal.
I had decent experience with math in school as well. I've been thinking about this a lot now with my daughter. She's in third grade, right? And third grade is sort of the key year where you have to memorize your multiplication tables and get solid division. And her school hasn't necessarily been emphasizing memorization as much. So I've taken that on myself. And maybe we can get into this later on as well in terms of sort of like what is the role of formulas, memorization. I'm of the school of thought that, like, the extent you can memorize these kind of things, like you sort of put it into sort of part of your brain where it becomes automatic, so that it frees up your brain to do other things. But this is a hot topic, and this to see it front end as a parent makes it all the more salient for me.
Yeah. I'll say my own relationship with math was kind of a love-hate relationship. Like I feel like by the time I got through my high school years, I thought that I had done everything that I was told to do around math until I realized that I really wasn't prepared properly to do some of the things I wanted to do for certain schools and for a Navy scholarship that I had to go through remediation. And that was a tough moment for me, and it felt very, pretty vulnerable and pretty embarrassing to realize like that you weren't there. And it took a long time for me to just sort of feel like I got somewhat caught up. I'm very curious. This is Jocelyn, from your angle, we hear about the science of reading. We're very impressed with how the education community and many states have shown a lot of commitment towards adopting policies that are promoting and encouraging and almost punishing those who are not following an evidence-based process for increasing literacy skills in their students. Commendable. Is there a science of reading? Is there an equivalent for math? And if there's not, what sort of things should we start to consider that should be in that bucket of good?
Yeah, so I'll say that it's a sort of. So there is something called the science of math, but I think a key difference between this and the science of reading is that while both have had their political baggage, science of reading is at a place where we have some general consensus on what that evidence-based reading instruction looks like, much more so than we do for math. So some of what Dale was talking about was sort of what folks consider rote memorization, doing the times tables, doing some of those basic math facts that allow you to access higher concepts, that versus sort of more inquiry-based approaches where students are exploring math. And experts say we need both. And I would imagine all of us, here agree with that. So I don't think anyone who's really looking to improve student outcomes wants a sort of math wars equivalent to the reading wars. And so I would caution against focusing too much on something like science of math as an equivalent, but certainly we'd love to see the kind of momentum for quality instruction in math that we're seeing in reading. And I don't think we're quite there yet.
Dale, what are the other kinds of investments that you think are the good ones that are the ones that are going to make most impact? And it's the same question for chat too.
Before I get to that, Jeff, a quick beat on what Jocelyn just said in terms of that, your great question in terms of the parallels between the science of reading and science of math. I think both are somewhat clumsy terms, but to Jocelyn's point in terms of sort of the momentum there is around that now, I think what the science of math, for lack of a better description, lacks that the science of reading does have is that it doesn't have a natural constituency. And we've seen sort of like these parents of, especially dyslexic kids, this very sort of grassroots feel to what we got right now. And I think folks in math who are really, really interested in this topic want to sort of generate a similar sort of ground, grassroots, grounds up momentum. And that's just, to this point at least, it's missing. But that said, in terms of things that folks are trying to do that I think are really interesting, Chad and I wrote a piece about this not too long ago. States like North Carolina and Texas are leveraging their annual state assessments results to identify more students, specifically marginalized students, Black and Brown students, to enroll in advanced math courses starting in middle school, with the idea that if you can get them in earlier, this sets them on a pathway that by high school, they're better positioned to be taking advanced math courses, whether it's trigonometry, calculus, and whatnot, which I think is definitely something that's really promising to use some of the tools that we have now to expand access to higher level math.
Chad, what would you add to that?
Yeah, so a couple things. One is this balance thing that Jocelyn talked about, Dale talked about as well. I think as a kid, I definitely got the core rote instruction and did a ton of multiplication times tables, things like that. My kids have kind of had the opposite experience. So I have a sixth grader and she's never had a multiplication test as far as I know. My fourth grader, similarly, like they have a very deep conceptual understanding of math that I lacked at that age, but they are not good at 4 times 6, 8 times 7, just like nailing those really fast. Yeah. And so I think the balance may have teetered in one direction. And so the balance, I don't think is quite right yet. I'll just make that comment. The other sort of strand I was going to pick up on is how states and districts are thinking about improvements and different pathways. I don't want to give too much away for our Math Madness bracket that's March Madness bracket that's coming up soon. But I will say that the way I think about it is sort of different types of interventions. And so you might have curriculum and professional development to work with math teachers. You might do things like enhancing technology and getting kids to spend more time with high quality apps like Zurn that Jocelyn mentioned, or Khan Academy, or ST Math, which we use here in Fairfax. Another one is like changing the course sequence or patterns. Dale mentioned the advanced math courses in Texas, which is really impressive, and it's cool to see that happening. And the last is using tutoring and time differently, how we think about getting more kids time on task or time working with math instruction. And tutoring is a big part of that. There are some other ways to give kids more time within the school day as well.
So I hear from you more instructional time, more use of data, better opportunities for students, more of these supports. Jocelyn, you are the head of the collaborative's focus on curriculum. What other efforts around content and curriculum need to happen? What would you tell teachers around this issue? You mentioned Zurn, but what else would you say?
Yeah, I will definitely keep beating the drum about the importance of providing all educators and students with access to evidence-based high-quality math curriculum. And that extends into the supplements too, right? So many teachers are spending time finding their own materials, figuring out what to work with. And so when states do something like partner with Zurn and offer it for free, teachers can feel confident that they're accessing something that is aligned to their core curriculum and that has been proven to help students. So I think that's a really important piece, is just helping, you know, giving teachers those tools. They don't have time to be researching the evidence base themselves, and we shouldn't expect them to do that. And educators need to be involved with decisions around curriculum in the first place, and especially the professional learning. So I was just talking to a state teacher of the year in math who talked about how her district has a great high quality curriculum, but a lot of her peers don't feel supported in implementing it. So it's not just having a good curriculum, but it's, do teachers have communities of practice? Do they have, you know, folks they can struggle through a lesson with? One program I love is a small new little program out of New Jersey called Rekindle Education, and they're matching math teachers with expert math coaches who are also New Jersey teachers to just give that one-on-one coaching, whatever that math teacher needs support with, so that they can have that confidence boost in the context of their curriculum. And we have to, you know, the thing teachers want most is time. So we have to give them that time to really work with the materials.
Chad, you lead our edu recovery work. What have you seen as far as the actual financial commitment across states? Like, what are the ones that you think are most promising? It's the same question for Dale too, I think, given what you've seen, like with that kind of commitment.
Some of the big ones that I think are promising are things we talked about, time already. So how do you give kids more time? And you can buy high quality tools like some of the technology platforms we mentioned, but that doesn't necessarily give kids necessarily more time unless you follow up and have a plan for kids to actually use it. Some of the ones that I find promising are some of the summer programs. So Alabama's Summer Adventures and Learning has some really cool outcomes, and they have quite a bit of spread. There's we highlighted the New Jersey Tutoring Corps. It also got some pretty strong impacts of on math. Another one that I'll throw out is Ector County. They've been held up recently. There's a district in Texas, and they have performance-based tutoring contracts. So rather than just give the money to a tutoring service and then hopefully and hope that the outcomes are good, the Ector County actually said the provider has some stake in how students do. And so the providers get more money if kids actually gain more learning. And so it behooves the provider to then partner with the district to make sure that whatever materials the kid is getting in the tutoring is aligned with what they're getting in the school day, as well as things like getting kids to actually attend and not just offer something, but make sure that kids actually receive the instruction and actually learn from it too.
That's super interesting. I'm really curious how, particularly as ESSER funding runs out, it feels like that kind of performance-based contract is a really strong way to ensure like these districts are getting legitimate, almost a guaranteed return on investment where the vendor goes away. Dale, what do you like?
So I don't know if I like it or not, but I think, but I would say that, one thing we haven't talked about yet as it relates to math, but that has certainly, to the extent that national media covers it, is what's been happening in California over the last few years with the revised mathematics framework. And it isn't necessarily a specific intervention per se, but that framework is going to guide a lot of districts in terms of how allocate their dollars. And so in California, if we're talking tens, hundreds of billions of dollars spent annually on education, that's a lot of money that's going to be thrown at stuff. And so in this case, ways to improve math. And it makes me think about, Chad's story earlier about his kids not necessarily being required to know their multiplications tables. I think going on a brief tangent, it made me think about sort of this thought that's, with technology, the idea that now that we have Google, kids don't need to know stuff, right? And like with calculators, right? Like, why do you need multiplication? You could just, it's at your fingertips, right? And I think with artificial intelligence now, just a little slightly over a year old in its current permutation, like it's interesting. It makes me think, like, is this the trend that we're going to continue to go down? In which case, at a high level, I think these controversies of math, if anything, around math, I should say, are going to heat up in the coming years.
Well, you know what else is going to heat up? The bracketology that's going to come out soon around March Madness. And I am excited for the three of you to be our arbiters because they will be the ones who are deciding which teams, which investments advance to the Final Four and eventually to the one that we determine to be the actual trophy winner of the March Madness trophy. So thank you all for being part of this. We look forward to the two conversations in the coming weeks. And are there any last shots from any of you?
I got one. So this is more for Dale or any other parents out there who want their kids to work on it. We found this website called factfreaks.org, and it for a minute, it challenges kids to see how many different types of math problems they can solve in either addition, subtraction, multiplication, division. And so it's a very low stakes way to practice addition, subtraction, multiplication, division, times tables. There's a lot of debate about whether it causes stress or not, but there is also a lot of evidence that mastering those basic skills is good for kids. And so if you're at home and seeing your parents struggle with them, check out factfreaks.org. It's a fun little website tool.
That's
All
funny,
right.
Chad, because I thought you were gonna use this moment to announce your companion to read, not guess. So
People have asked me about that. I don't have anything that I can add value there yet. It's maybe someday in the future.
my last one is gonna be a little bit of a stealing others' thunder, but we can't normalize that it's okay to not be a math person. We would never say it's okay to not be a reading person. You'd be embarrassed to say that. But I was guilty of it myself, and that's why I'm trying to do better. It's not okay to say you're not a math person. All kids are math kids. Thank you, Zarn.
Absolutely. We are all problem solvers. All right. Well, thank you all. To keep up with more commentary from Dale, Chad, and Jocelyn, visit Assessment HQ, EduProgress, and Curriculum HQ for weekly posts. This is Jim Cowan from the Collaborative for Student Success. Thanks for listening to today's episode of Route K-12 Exploring Education Recovery, where we showcase ways public education is evolving by talking to the people doing the hard work to educate America's kids. Reach out to us at edurecoveryhub.org/podcast or follow us on Twitter at our handle, Student Success.